For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today in the podcast that thought holistic was what Moses used to part the waters, we talk Europa League final. That cup final curse shows no signs of stopping as John Terry does another full kit celebration and Benfica lose another big one. We look back on the Chelsea success, salute Rafa and Fernando, and then move on to the Premier League final day, several games of which might actually matter. There's a farewell to Wigan, post-Sid in Spain, and a bit more in this almost at the finishing line, Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. It's been another exciting week in football, but not as exciting as the name-in-film bombshell that producer Ben just laid on us. We're talking about Point Break. Which I don't think there's anybody who doesn't like. And if there is, I don't like them, I think. It is an absolute good, isn't it, cinematically speaking, Point Break, isn't it?
It's very good.
Yeah. Very good, yeah. Jacob, you're on board with that one?
Yep.
We all like Point Break. And we're discussing the fact that Keanu Reeves, his name is Johnny Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And producer Ben says, not as stupid as Tom Cruise's name in Days of Thunder, and otherwise... pretty brilliant film. I'm joking, clearly, with that last bit. Anyone got the name? Anyone got the name? What's Tom Cruise's character called in Days of Thunder? Listeners?
Well, Ben had it, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's Cole Trickle.
Cole Trickle. Anyway, the vocal talents of James Horncastle gracing today's pod.
That's me.
Nice to have you on board. Jimbo. Jacob Steinberg, you're here too.
Hello.
Lovely stuff. You've watched the football.
Yep.
Crucially. And Greg Ruffley. He's a little bit perplexed to find himself here.
I'm always perplexed when you introduce me these days.
Yeah. I know. You changed your name, didn't you?
Should I just put the wedding
no,
ring
it's not.
I'll be Greg Ruffley for this part.
No, Greg, just taken off the artist previously ring. Known as Greg Ruffley, now known as Greg Bukowski.
Greg Ruffley would have more to tell you about this.
Would he?
Europa
what would,
League final.
What would Greg say?
Well, he'd have watched it because he's not married and doesn't have
did
a child.
Did you not watch the Europa League final?
No, I saw the second half of it.
Which is when
due to some
stuff
you know, fixture pile-ups, and I was in for next Thursday's pod. I'll be sat here on my own next Thursday if anyone wants to come and join me.
All right. Yeah. There you go. Now, luckily enough, we have people who did watch the game. Jacob, you, and also, very shortly on the phone, we'll be speaking to a man who on Wednesday lifted the cup himself. Jacob, you first, though, eh? What do you think?
It wasn't the greatest game, I think. Not the greatest final that we'll see, but Chelsea seem to have this way in finals of grinding it out and getting and ending up lifting it, making sure that John Terry can have his costume change at the end. And I think that Benfica were probably... They came out very strong, actually, in the first 20, 25 minutes, I think, and Chelsea were a bit shocked, I think, with the way Benfica started. And they could have scored, maybe, but Benfica were just a little bit too tippy-tappy around the box, didn't get their shots off. And
what about the offside goal? I mean, it was a rotten night for Benfica, a rotten week, in fact, because twice, the two biggest games of the season, they lost both 2-1 in the 92nd minute.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, to lose... both at the death must be pretty crushing psychologically, particularly given their curse of not having won a European final, what, 7 European finals. Yeah. They've got the Portuguese Cup final to come, which I think they'd be favoured. I think they're playing Vitor Guimarães or something like that.
I think they're sixth in the league.
So yeah.
It'd be favourites to win that.
I think Greg Ruffley out over here.
If they were to do a Bayer Leverkusen, you know, it would be a shock. But
all right, nice one. Jacob, Rafa, vindicated.
Yeah, I think this is a tournament that Chelsea probably should be winning in any case. You know, they came down from the Champions League, and I remember Arsene Wenger a few weeks ago saying, I don't actually consider Chelsea, something along the lines of, I don't consider Chelsea to be in this tournament.
Right.
Because they're a team from the Champions League.
So winning a Europa League isn't a trophy, but finishing the
finishing
top four
fourth is. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's obviously ultimately more important for Chelsea, isn't it?
Of course, that's all up in the air now, because it looked as though Chelsea had actually sealed their top four status, but now we discover someone's dredged up this, article C14, which is... In the event of a Chelsea draw, if Arsenal were to win by a single goal margin and score two more than Chelsea, they would be equal on points, goal difference and goals scored, which would then call for a historic application of the Premier League's rule C14. So basically, Chelsea 0-0 Everton, that could happen. Newcastle 1, Arsenal 2, that could happen. A playoff, and nobody knows when it's going to take place.
Or where?
They can't play at Wembley, and they're not allowed because of the Champions League final.
Right.
They're not allowed to play clearly at White Hart Lane. They're not going to put Chelsea and Arsenal there. So one of the options is possibly Upton Park.
Olympic Stadium?
Well, it's not a football stadium.
That's true.
I suggested last night to some people from the Premier League, why don't you play at Twickenham? They said, already Trickers. Asked, go on.
Maybe they had it in the Olympic Stadium.
But aren't Chelsea going to be off in the States? Why not make Game 39?
Yeah, isn't this just not going to happen, though?
Oh.
I mean,
Greg.
What are the odds of those two results? I mean, 0-0, 1-2, it could happen, but it's not likely to happen. And,
all right.
And then, I don't know.
It's a 1% chance.
Both teams had, 1% chance, and we're talking about this.
Really? Is that all it is? 1%?
It is, yeah.
Have you just made that number up?
No, I saw that chance. I saw that probability. But
written down by somebody who made it up. They just made that up.
But yeah, maybe they could have a trophy for it if it were that'd be the Wenger Cup sorted, right?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. The Wenger Cup.
Maybe they could do it at the Emirates Cup, just let them in there, play it in August or whenever it is they do that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like that. Torres, vindicated.
Good goal. Took it well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't great defending by Luis Sal, who was shrugged off way too easily. But then once he got through, we've had that thing from Torres where there's been the indecision and he's fluffed his chances. But, you know, in that instance, he took it around the keeper really well. And when he was, I still thought maybe there was a chance he was going to miss because there was a defender covering back and he made sure he chipped it. So the guy on the line couldn't do anything about it.
It was a great goal. In terms of, I don't know whether it was choreographed or anything in terms of the check plays it out and matter with to just touch it on. That was an exquisite touch.
Certainly was. You saw him in his pomp, of course, regularly for Liverpool. When you see him play like that, do you think it's, what do you think? Because with all the great stats he's had in Europe this year, you kind of wonder, should we believe the stats or believe our eyes? What do you think now?
See, when I watch Torres these days, I don't actually think he's lost any pace at all. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, he's not the same player, he's lost pace, he's physically not what he was. I don't actually agree. I think he's still very pacey, he's still very strong, but it's just his decision-making often is very poor in front of goals these days. At Liverpool, you could see, I think, with the confidence he had, he would often, it'd be a snap decision, and he'd score a goal. At Chelsea, he just seems to wait sometimes a second or two too long. Maybe he's felt a little bit like the pressure's being off this season because he scored a few more goals, and maybe towards the end of the season he's just started to play a bit more freely. But I mean, just actually on the game last night, I thought Benfica in the second half looked very jaded. I mean, a lot of people have gone on about the amount of games Chelsea have played and the fact that they've had a few injuries and their squad's being ravaged. But I thought Benfica, I think three of their players went down with cramp in the second half. Like
when they took the penalty, went down to cramp.
Yeah, I mean, that was 70 minutes. And they used three of the substitutes up. So I think that's why Chelsea really came on strong, I think, because they could see they were playing against a team who obviously psychologically were done after the weekend's defeat to Porto as well.
Magnificent. Well, they certainly were absolutely laid out on the turf come the final whistle. Let's now speak to our very own Dominic Fifield, who was at the Amsterdam Arena to witness these historic events. Dominic, exciting times in Amsterdam.
They were in the end. Wasn't the greatest performance from Chelsea, but they stuck in it. They had that stubborn streak that served them so well last year in Munich and en route to Munich. And they did it again. It was quite fitting in some ways that Branislav Ivanovic should be the one that scored the winning goal, having missed last year's final through suspension. And here we are again with Chelsea celebrating a European trophy.
Yeah, here we are once again with John Terry in full kit celebrating a European trophy. Did anyone bat an eyelid at his sudden reappearance and grabbing of the cup?
It was telegraphed. It was always going to be like that. And I can be corrected, but I think UEFA now stipulate that if you want to actually receive the trophy and be part of those celebrations, you are supposed to be in kit.
Oh.
I did check. He wasn't wearing shin pads yesterday. Just for the record.
But Hazard was in a suit.
Yeah, he was in a suit, and I don't quite know how that slipped the net. I mean, Demba Ba went up as well, but Oriol Romeo was in his kit, and he hasn't been included in Chelsea's European squad for the second half of the season, so I think some of them were complying, others weren't.
Right, it's interesting, yeah, him and Ba, who can have had absolutely no involvement in this trophy at all. But other than that, the celebrations, Rafa, was there applause for Rafa from the Chelsea fans?
Well, there was. I mean, as he waited to, as the players waited to go up the steps to receive the trophy, a few Chelsea fans near the sort of touchline called him over and shook his hand and clapped him on the back, etc. And then when he had the trophy on the pitch afterwards, he sort of went over to them and was handed the trophy, lifted it, and it did appear that there were Chelsea fans cheering him. It was probably a bit of a moment, that, because obviously he's gone through quite a lot with them, and that relationship's been fractious at best throughout his 7 months at Chelsea. But maybe I don't think he was never going to be accepted. He was never going to be liked even by the majority of Chelsea fans. But maybe there's a grudging respect now for what he's done and the way he's managed this squad and got through 68 games so far, 69 on Sunday. He's got them in the top three at the moment, and now finally has some silverware to celebrate as well. So I think he's done pretty well, to be honest, in the 7 months he's been there.
All right, as you write this morning, 68 matches, 11 countries, 8 competitions, and it could indeed go to 70, thanks to the extraordinary news that Directive C-14 may have to be implemented by the Premier League. Presumably Chelsea were aware of this in Amsterdam, were they? This news had reached them there?
Yes, it had, but I mean, it's in their hands, isn't it, to avoid that. They just need to beat Everton on Sunday, and they're there. Bizarrely, when coming back with the team last night, I sort of anticipated a sort of very raucous atmosphere on that flight. And
you were on the plane with them, Dom?
I was on the plane with them, yeah. Lucky enough to be on the plane with them. But it was actually quite subdued, bizarrely. And a few players having a bottle of beer at the front. The sort of more riotous members of the travelling party were the VIPs and sponsors, who were sort of sat in the middle of the plane, and they occasionally broke out into chants of "We know what we are." As the Europa League trophy was sort of handed down the back of the plane as well, I guess that just reflects the fact that their season isn't over. They've got another big game coming on Sunday against Everton, and then no rest for the wicked. They go straight off to the United States to play Manchester City twice in New York and St. Louis next week. So it never ends this season.
How far down the plane did this cup that they obviously cherished so much that they literally tossed it over their shoulders, how far did it reach, Dom?
I was in row 34 of 35, right. And it did reach me.
Hey.
It's very heavy. It's a lot heavier. I was lucky enough to fly back with Liverpool in 2005. Big Ears is a lot lighter than the UEFA Cup. I suppose that's what you'd expect, actually. It looks as if it's been hewn from granite. It's absolutely an incredible trophy, the Europa League.
All right. You're off to meet Frank Lampard next. Presumably he's in a great mood now.
Yeah, he was. He was happy. He was content as he got on that plane. And I fully expect him to announce either today or certainly before the weekend that he's signing this one-year contract extension to stay at Chelsea for another year and build on this goal-scoring record. Quite what role he would have to play next season in the team, I suppose, is open to question, given that Benitez has already indicated today that he expects them to spend €100 million on 3 or 4 new players in the summer to challenge for the Premier League. So I guess the new manager, most likely Jose Mourinho, would want the influence of Frank Lampard around the place. And I mean, to be honest, the way he's performed in the latter half of this season, well managed by Benitez, I think he probably warrants another year. He has weighed in with his usual tally of goals and important goals as well, so it's well merited the extra year.
Well, give him a big hug from us, Dom, and many thanks for that. Europa League trophy in your lap.
Have a good one. Enjoy.
Dominic Fifield, and you can read what Frank Lampard has to say probably in Friday's Guardian. Now, coming up in a couple of seconds, we'll be looking at the games that matter, all three of them, this weekend. Greg, there's 3 games that matter, and the reason, well, 2.5, and the reason there's only 2.5 that matter is because Arsenal beat Wigan, blowing the whole narrative for the final day of the season, thanks a bundle Gunners. What a shame for Wigan as well. Although, you know, nice for somebody else to have a go at this Premier League lot. But, you know, they were fun, weren't they?
Yeah, and I guess when you reflect on the teams that are coming up next year, I don't think there's necessarily anyone who is as fun. Or, you know,
Ian Holloway, he's fun.
Yeah, I guess so. But, yeah. You know, we've been quite lucky in that, you know, Swansea have come up. You could say Holloway's Blackpool, when they came up, they were quite good fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Hull, Cardiff, and we yet to see what the playoffs are going to bring. But yeah, no, I'm a little bit gutted.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked very, very gutted.
with Martinez, there's an interesting thing there in that there's so much is made of the results in the Premier League, and it's all about, you know, winning games and staying up, and that's what you build your reputation as a manager on. But with Martinez, it's two seasons. Last season, he almost got relegated. He flirted with relegation before that as well. And this season, he did get relegated, yet his stock hasn't fallen. And, you know, today there's talk of him being...
He didn't win the FA Cup.
He won the FA Cup, over that. But yeah, in terms of the league performances, Wigan, they're a team who have been relegated and almost relegated last season, and yet his managerial stock has risen through that. And that says something about maybe how people look at football these days, that they look at the style and systems more so than the results perhaps they did in the past. And he's been linked with the Malaga job.
I think Whelan said that there are bigger jobs, bigger offers on the table than Everton, which, you know, you might lead you to think something from Spain or otherwise.
Right.
But yeah, going back to that point, I think with Martinez, the results are almost kind of irrelevant. I know they're not because they've gone down, but you know, they play in this certain way which everyone likes. They've actually produced a lot of players that, you know, he's brought a lot of players on, like McCarthy, like McManaman. Get people talking about
Maloney
them.
As well this season.
Maloney as well, and so. Yeah, I guess because not many people have an attachment to Wigan beyond how the way they play. You know, they're not fans. They're not totally swayed by the results. They just, you know, as a neutral, kind of enjoy them.
Right. You do wonder though sometimes about they're sometimes almost self-satisfied with the way they play though, and you do want them to. Like the game against QPR, where they were playing against 10 men for 70 minutes, and they didn't really create anything, and they're kind of happy to go, oh, look, we're passing. Well, go on, create a chance as well. Losing to teams like Swansea at home, Swansea reserves, didn't beat QPR twice this season. So you still have those certain doubts about Martinez, and also the defending at times has been
71
appalling.
Goals conceded.
Yeah, I mean, defending
that's terrific entertainment right there.
Mm. Well, yeah. But probably not for Wigan fans.
No, that's true.
For fans of maybe what club he takes over at.
Yeah. Would the team be broken up, do you think? Will there be a massive kind of clear out of players?
Well, they talk about being in a relatively decent financial position, irrespective of whether they go down or not. And that would allow them to hold on to a core of players. And even maybe, you know, Martinez, whether it out of loyalty or whatnot, yeah, he's already turned down two other jobs, whether he might stay as well. But, you know, I can't see him staying, can't see many of the other players staying who've...
No, sure, I'm waggling a finger at you because I'm just thinking they'll need a big squad as well because they're in the Europa League.
Yeah.
They need
four or five more players to be added to that squad. But
will they take part in the Europa League, do you think? Or will they decline it? You can decline it.
Can you? No, I don't think Wigan declined the Europa League.
Yeah.
No. But
it might be an incentive for actually them players to stay. They think, look, we're going down to the Championship, but we've still got European football. It might be an incentive for Martinez to stay as well to think, look, you know, I get them back up and we have this European campaign.
Problem they've had season on season, though, is that regardless, when they've stayed in the Premier League, they've still lost the best players to other clubs because they, like you say, Martinez, even before him, Bruce and Jewell brought players in who no one had really kind of heard of before, made them into good players, and then they moved on from Wigan. I think that'll happen even more so now. Yeah. They go down.
And can you imagine the fixture pile? I mean, the Championship is, what, 48 games?
Six games.
And then you've got the Europa League, which is...
Well, 17 if you get to the final, is that right?
Yeah,
Birmingham had good fun in the Europa League a few years ago when the same happened to them, though. I remember
they
did all right.
They got into playoffs in the end. Yeah. They struggled in the first half of the season last year. But once they got that out of their system, then Chris Hughton got them up there, finished fourth or fifth or something.
Mm. Anyway, Arsenal made short work in the second half of Wigan. It was a fairly close thing until... Okay, who got the second goal for Arsenal? Walcott.
Yeah, they were playing well, Wigan, in and around their goal. And then I think when McManaman got injured, which is a shame for him, especially because he got called up to the under-21 squad for the Euros this summer. But as soon as he went off and DeSanto came on, it changed a little bit, didn't it?
Right, and then Arsenal... I mean, even before that, to be fair, Gibbs had looked pretty good. Koscielny as well had a good game, no? By the end, they look very comfortable, Arsenal. They're their fourth straight victory.
Yeah, when they get into their groove, they're a good side. Mm. There are times when they're just flat, which was the case, I think, when it was 1-0, 1-0, until they got the second goal. There were nerves.
Does make their trip to Newcastle this weekend look interesting, with Arsenal on a real roll, and Giroud coming back into the lineup. And Newcastle, a team that they beat 7-3. Back at the Emirates with Theo Walcott scoring a hat-trick, as you know. Of course, Newcastle have tightened up enormously since then. They only lost 6-0 to Liverpool recently. And, well, of course, Pardew was joking when he said, I don't care if we lose 4-0, but still, what a strange thing to say.
Yeah. I think Newcastle kind of owe their home fans a result because, okay, there's that 6-0 defeat to Liverpool. Mm. That came off the back of the time where Derby, and they lost, what, 3-0. Mm. And so, you know, whether that'll be a motivation to kind of, I don't know, show some respect to their fans after after being hammered in front of them so frequently in recent memory, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that motivation stacks up, really, given the way that Newcastle... I mean, if you're not motivated by a Tyne-Wear derby, not sure if giving something back to the fans is going to light your fire. I don't know. We shall see. Greg, what do you think?
I can only see Arsenal winning that, really. Mm-hmm. I've not been that impressed with Newcastle. They had a few good games when they brought in the new players in January. They brought in all the French players. I think since then they've not really gelled, and they've been let down by a lot of players. One of the biggest disappointments for me this season has been Tiote. He looked like he was going to be a really, really, really good player last season, and this season his discipline has been really poor, which was there's always question marks over that, but his distribution as well, and he's just not looked the player that a lot of fans hoped he was going to develop into.
He scored the winner, of course, that extraordinary 4-4 a couple of seasons back.
Yeah, and that was some goal, but I mean, this is the thing, is, you know...
Oh, sorry, it was the equaliser, wasn't it? But the moral winner in that 4-4 draw.
Yeah. He's a player.
4-4 draw. You have to laugh. Sorry, Greg.
He's a player among many, you know, many of the other ones there who they just haven't gelled this second half of the season. I can only see Arsenal winning that one.
All right. Okay. A quirky stat. Amy Lawrence tweeting, since Wenger last won a trophy at Arsenal, how about this? All of the other 91 English league clubs have changed their manager. Is that amazing?
Stunned.
I'm pretty stunned by that.
Mind you, I think if you look at all the coaches who won domestic trophies in this country last year,
yeah.
Dalglish League Cup, Di Matteo FA Cup, and Mancini, the Premier League, they're all gone.
Right.
You know, so it just gives an idea of the turnover.
Yeah, absolutely. That Bella Gutman's been busy, hasn't he? My word. Let's move on to other games. And so we think Arsenal are going to win, Jacob? Yeah. Hmm?
Yeah, although they've found it a little bit tricky at Newcastle. Yeah. They only drew there last season. Right. And both games, the last two games, have had players sent off as well. So... You know, they've been wound up a little bit in the last two times, although both times it was Jay Barton, so I might be talking rubbish, you know.
Right. Okay, now, Chelsea, meantime, they're hosting Everton, and they want to avoid the draw to avoid the spectre of a playoff, etc. It's David Moyes' last game, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, but they've got an absolutely rotten record of Everton at Chelsea. Yep. Haven't won there in 19 years.
Yeah, 1994.
They did win on penalties.
They won in penalties in the Cup.
In the league. But
in the league. Yeah, come one there in the league.
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Right. You're right, in the league, though.
In the league, yeah.
Yeah, but that was only a draw as well.
So. What?
Well, they won on penalties.
Ah, yeah. Sure. Fair enough. Yeah. Plus, they're rubbish against teams from the top 4, 5, etc. Well, anyway, so David Moyes' last game, they'll want to give him a good send-off.
They will do, yeah.
Rafa's last league game as well, so they'll want to give him a good send-off.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get a really good send-off of Chelsea and Everton fans combined together. It's funny with Everton. I struggle to see who their next manager is going to be because there's talk of Martinez, and he would be a very different type of manager to Moyes, the pragmatist. And I just wonder with Everton that it's going to be difficult to find the right man for the job. I know some people have said, Benitez, because he's still living on the whirl and whatnot. And it's not even the fact that he's a former Liverpool manager managing Everton that would prevent that. It's just the fact that Everton don't have much money and you want to be knocking on the chairman's door to spend, and I can't see Benitez getting on with Ken Wright in that situation. Perhaps Martinez would deal with the financial situation like he has done at Wigan, but in terms of, you know, taking on a David Moyes side, I don't really see him as the right man for that job. I don't know if anyone else has got any
Everton
suggestions.
Play good football there.
They do. Moyes has made them play more expansively than they have in the past. I just wonder.
Well, Poyet has been linked to it, but then you were saying he's been linked to pretty much every position.
Yeah, every other job going as well. Yeah. I don't know.
Well,
the Poyet's quite similar to Martinez in, you know, not quite as interesting tactically as Martinez, but, you know, again, it's a kind of attacking, passing style of football, isn't it? So
well, and it, and Everton, as much like you say, they're capable of playing very good football on the day, but they have always been built on a strong foundation of a back four that is really well drilled. And Martinez has not 71 goals conceded at Wigan. You can't really see him, you know. Or maybe he comes in and thinks, well, you know, that back four sorted. I'll you know, deal with these. And then Baines goes and Jagielka goes, and he's like, oh, aye.
Yeah,
I have to have a look to Spain for some bargain basement central defender.
Well, indeed. In the meantime, anyway, while we're discussing who might be taking over from David Moyes at Everton, what's going to happen between Spurs and Sunderland? Sunderland are going to be coming into the... They've been saved from relegation by Wigan's defeat, but they haven't been saved from Paulo Di Canio and his no holidays round here and don't go acting like a playboy model Connor Wickham. Did you see this quote?
No.
He said it, maybe he'd have to slap Connor Wickham in the face a bit. Just, you know, just as true motivation, he explained, in case anyone had the wrong idea about that. And that basically there was no point. He complains that it's cold, but so he's banned him from wearing small T-shirts. And he
How
said,
small?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Presumably too small to keep your, you know, like extremities warm.
Belly shirts going here.
Very, very possibly. That might be the issue.
Cut off Flashdance 1980s style ones.
It almost certainly, because he then goes on to say there's no point that the people here shouldn't be acting like playboy models. I don't know what he means by that.
I don't know. Connor Wickham must be made up at being called a playboy model.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Imagine that Connor Wickham centrefold.
Yeah.
Let's all take a moment with that one.
I wouldn't be on that.
You wouldn't? Okay. Well, so yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And he said that, you know, they shouldn't have booked any holidays for the end of the season because no holidays run here. There we go. They're taking on Spurs. Adebayor's back in form. Certainly is. Looking good. Spurs for this one, do you think?
Yeah, they'll win.
All right. No Danny Rose, of course, for Sunderland.
I think if Spurs win and Arsenal win, and, you know, there'll be a lot of sort of, they've missed out on the Champions League, blah, blah, blah. But I think if they win, it's still their highest ever Premier League points total. Mm. And also, it'd be the highest points total achieved by a team finishing fifth for nearly 20 or so years. So
that'll be a nice comfort for them.
Yes. But, you know, it just goes to show how close they'd have run it anyway, if that's any consolation, which I'm sure it's probably not. But.
Yeah, interesting, because Andre Villas-Boas is a very popular manager. Has he been a success, do you think, in the circumstances?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's taken the team on a lot further than Redknapp did. I do think there has been improvement there. And I think he's also put his own stamp on that team. Yeah, I think they play in they're a much more solid team than Redknapp's ever were, which was kind of, they always gave the impression that there was some kind of maverick side, I thought. Whereas now, you know, they have a game plan or several game plans about them. And I think they've been good to watch and good to follow this year.
All right. We'll see what happens this weekend. Then they are 2 points behind Arsenal. Well, it depends what happens at Newcastle. Meantime, I say that those are the only games that matter. But Greg, of course, QPR Liverpool.
It's huge, huge, because Jamie Carragher is playing his last ever game for Liverpool. And I'll be going up there. I remember seeing his home debut when he came on against Aston Villa, and he leapt up above everyone. Well, actually, Aston Villa's defending was as bad as it has been this season. He was unmarked and scored a header. And we all thought, wow, who's this kid coming through? You know, he's an attacking midfielder who's, you know, going to go on to score many goals and be a leader in midfield.
He did, but at the wrong end.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He still actually owes Liverpool about 3 goals, I think. he's in debit by about -3, I think. It'd be sad to see Carragher go. I feel it's like an end of an era, kind of, for me. And
how many years is it?
It's been 1997 he made his debut, so
16
years. Yeah. I reckon he could have gone on a couple more years, but he's made that decision to leave. And yeah, it's with him leaving and Ferguson retiring and Scholes retiring again, I don't know, I've just got this sense of, it's, you know, modern football has won, and these old school players who would spend as long at a club as they have done, you won't see many of their likes ever again. And I think that's why he'll get such a good send off. Likewise with Scholes, and Giggs will be the next one when he retires.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very sad to see him leave, but I do think he'll come back in a coaching capacity once he's squabbled with Gary Neville over who moves the little dots around the board on Sky next season.
Excellent. We look forward to that. In the meantime, last game of the season for Brendan Rodgers. at the end of the, I imagine it'll be straight afterwards in the dressing room, he'll open up the envelopes, yeah?
Mm.
And who do you think's going to be in there?
He might have more than three envelopes.
No, he said three.
Yeah.
I don't think Carragher's name's, you know, in there, so yeah, he's put
him in there, just get him out, yeah. I don't know, he probably doesn't want to put Joe Allen's name in there, but he might be someone whose name is in there.
Right.
I don't know if Joe Allen's let them down. I mean, he'll probably have Sahin's name in there, but when Rodgers misused Sahin...
So he should have his own name in there?
But perhaps, yeah. No, I think Rodgers has... I think this season, Rodgers has... he's had a season of progression, and very early on in the season, you forget there's players... He was having to rely on young players like Sterling and you know, in too many games, and he's brought in Coutinho, looks like a really good player and a bargain for $8 million. He's probably overspent on Joe Allen, who I don't think was necessary to bring in a midfielder and then play him in a holding role where he didn't play for Swansea, which was a bit bizarre. And I think next season the fans will be on side with Rodgers, and he I can see there being progress, but slow. I think the more worrying thing at Liverpool is the owners. I really think they didn't think it was going to be this hard to get into the top four in the Premier League, and I think they've been a bit surprised by how much it's cost them, and the fact that they haven't seen, you know, much progression in terms of results, even though some of the performances have suggested there might be progression. I just worry about their commitment to the club in the future.
Big Andy come back though next season.
Big Andy will be back. Yeah, and then he'll be out again, probably on loan again. And with these players, like $35 million, it's like buying a car, and it's a, you know, this brand new car that costs you a lot of money, then just letting all your mates kind of have a ride round in it a bit and get it back with about 50,000 miles on the clock some years later and sell it on for about £500. Quite depressing.
It's very, very depressing. Right, on that note, we'll finish off part two. Still to come, playoffs, some posts, and a bit of Sid in Madrid.
Hello, Jimbo. Yes, I'm here.
Great news, Sid. We can't wait to hear about the Copa del Rey final on a Friday. And why is it on a Friday?
It's on a Friday, James, because Eurovision is on Saturday.
Whoa.
So the Copa del Rey final, which was penciled in for Saturday, is moved to Friday, which is... I don't even know where to start with it.
I think that's entirely fair. You can't move the Eurovision final because there's how many other nations involved?
No, all in which case you don't set the Copa del Rey final up on the same day in the first place. And
right.
If you have set up the Copa del Rey final on that day, then you leave it there, surely.
Oh, I see. You mean actually run it... Okay.
I mean, it's not that this has been set on the Friday to avoid the Eurovision. It is that it has been moved to the Friday when they realised it clashed with the Eurovision.
Right.
Because the rights are held by TVE, which, of course, is the equivalent of BBC here, the state channel. And TVE were told by Eurovision, you've got the Eurovision, you have to show it. Now, TVE have got another channel, but they weren't prepared to. And what amazes me is that the Federation let them get away with that.
Yeah,
that's shocking. They just said, right, you've got a choice. You show it on your other channel, or we give it to someone else.
When was the last time Spain won Eurovision, Sid?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure. It might be the famous La 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 La, which beat Cliff Richard in 1966, I think. I don't
really?
Know if they won it since then.
Wow. The curse
this was La
Cliff.
La 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 that... crikey, who was it? It might have been Surratt wanted to sing in Catalan and the regime wouldn't let him, so they gave it to Maciel,
right.
Who sang it in Spanish. And, of course, La 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 in Catalan is La 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 La.
Right, okay. Which would have caused, you know... public unrest. Wow, that's an amazing story, James. They take it seriously in Italy, James?
No, because they've got San Remo, haven't
which
they?
Bizarrely is actually a feeder tournament for Eurovision.
Mm.
Yeah, I always got a little bit perturbed by that. Anyway, Sid, so when they actually this big thing then on the Friday, it's only a Madrid derby in Madrid.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Woof, eh? Woof. No, it does promise. I mean, obviously, inevitably, the Madrid derby tends to be a bit awful, and we all know which way it's going to go because it's Atletico haven't won since 1999. It's 25 games now. In that time, at one point a few years ago, I did a list of the teams that had beaten Real Madrid in that period, and Atletico Madrid hadn't been able to. And it was more than 50 teams had beaten Madrid, but not
wow.
Atletico, despite whatever it is at that point. It would have been what 20, 21 attempts. But the last time they met in the Copa del Rey final at the Bernabeu, it was Atletico Madrid who won in 1992. And it's quite exciting. I think the idea of the Bernabeu, where it's actually half and half, I think the atmosphere is going to be brilliant.
Hmm. That'll be amazing.
The game might not be.
Well, he's hoping, eh? Real Madrid coming into this clash with their neighbours, though, with particularly fractured I would call it divided, except it's kind of Mu on one side and pretty much everybody else on the other dressing room. Has there been any other flare-ups, and how do you think that might affect the team or not?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, you're right, that the dividing line now does look almost Mourinho on one side, players on the other. Now, I think that's slightly false, and I think that's been slightly imposed by the fact that since the Champions League knockout, Mourinho has started kind of lashing out at just about everyone, and I think that has taken some of the waverers into the non-Mourinho camp, in so much as there are camps, and I think sometimes we tend to exaggerate this. I think it's also, of course, conditioned by the assumption that the players have that Mourinho is going, and therefore, well, you know, it's better to realign yourself, and that was never seen more clearly, I think, than when Pepe defended Iker Casillas against Mourinho. Now, it's almost certainly true that Pepe defended Casillas because he felt to do, and he felt that Mourinho had taken a step too far. But I think the conditioning factor is that he thought, well, Casillas is staying and Mourinho is not.
But do you think it's going to affect the team?
Well, I'm sure it is. I mean, obviously, you know, on one level at least, it has to affect the team. And I think over a long period of time, this affects the team quite badly. In fact, I think it's worth posing the question as to whether Real Madrid's failure to get anywhere near the league title this year was partly because of this. I mean, that's certainly plausible. But going into a one-off game, I think the players want it enough that you know, it shouldn't really be a problem. They're uniting around the idea of a Copa del Rey final. There's something interesting that Alonso said the other day about how we've all got to focus on this and then afterwards we'll see. And it almost sounded like, I mean, I know he didn't mean it like this, but it almost sounded like he was saying, right, let's put the fights off until afterwards, and then afterwards let's go, you know, kicking lumps out of each other. Cool. But for now, let's worry about the Copa del Rey final. They was partly kind of funneled into a unity during the Champions League campaign. That, of course, then blew up and bits of it came out. I think they'll come out again after the cup final. But for the moment, at least, I'm not completely convinced that it should be that much of a problem for them.
All right. In other rumour news, Pellegrini, of course, everyone's saying that's now nailed on for Man City. Is that your understanding, Sid?
Yeah, I mean, it, by the way, it's not true that it had been officially confirmed by City. I think Sky might have been running that yesterday. And there was no official confirmation from Malaga. What Malaga have said is that you know, if and when this happens, they won't get in the way, because of course, you know, they know the reality of their financial situation. They know that actually it doesn't do them any harm. Well, it does them harm in footballing terms for Pellegrini to go, but there would be a financial compensation package, and that's quite valuable to them. They know that they're not really in a position to oblige him to say. So there won't be. I think the point really is that it won't be a battle. It won't be nasty when it happens. I think it will be handled with a certain degree of dignity, which is the way that Pellegrini normally handles things, and I think the way that those at the club, if not the owner, at the club at Malaga have been handling things. So I don't think there'll be any problem. The next step, of course, in this equation is what happens with Isco.
In Italy, James, final weekend very much there, and there's still third place up for grabs. Milan 2 points ahead of Fiorentina. They're both playing relegated teams this weekend. Probably you'd think the Rossoneri are going in. Don't know yet what's going to happen with Allegri, but let me ask you about two other fellows. One, a little fellow by the name of Roberto Mancini. Might he find a home again in Serie A?
Well, there's certainly jobs coming up.
Would he, do you think?
But I think he considers it a little bit beneath him.
Yeah.
I suspect that with Mancini, he might go the same way of Benitez in between Inter and Chelsea.
Do a blog.
A very angry blog. Maybe a fashion tips blog.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe.
I think he'll wait for the right job to come around. I also think Mancini is the kind of guy who established elite teams won't go to. I think up and coming, teams with an aspiration to become big, like a Monaco, like City were when they appointed him, would perhaps the only teams which would look at him, because he's one of those guys who has a CV laden with trophies, but yet you look at that CV and you think, how good really is he? What does that tell us? You know, there's three Scudetti at Inter and the Premier League at City and the FA Cup at City. You know, I think there are still some question marks about him.
What about Benitez? As you mentioned there, some quotes about how he misses Italy, and a lot of reports linking him with a Napoli job.
I think he was just keeping his options open there,
right?
Because he was talking on Italian TV after Europa League final yesterday, and that there is a lot of intrigue about the Napoli job at the moment, because it looks like Mazzarri is going to leave. And but I mean, that's become a very kind of hipster bench to be linked with, because Bielsa's being linked with it.
You see,
yeah. So.
Ooh. All right then. Well, a couple other things to look at. Ooh, posts. Andy X 1976 just responding here to our talk of the Bayern Munich celebrations where they poured steins of beer all over one another. I mean, really, it was just extraordinary. It was just like an orgy of beer being thrown around. And he says that celebrations have always been like that. Why do you think Heynckes was wearing a tracksuit? I remember a few years back, Van Gaal actually changed at halftime from suit to tracksuit, kind of John Terry paradigm, which caused a big lull from the TV commentators. But I have a question. He says, where does this Stein thing come from? All Americans and Brits seem to think those big beer mugs are called Stein. Never heard that anywhere in Bavaria or elsewhere in Germany. Is that true? Really? Wow, okay. Learn something new every day. And, the other thing about that, of course, was that Ribery is a Muslim, and so's I think Jerome Boateng. What was there was something here about Jerome Boateng poured the beer on...
But apparently he tweeted out it was a non-alcoholic beer.
Non-alcoholic beer.
So it's okay.
Yeah. Good stuff.
He didn't drink it, though, did he? He's pouring it on him, did
no,
he?
But I think even having contact...
Is it just... You can't just have alcohol on you. So you couldn't use alcohol, you know, like if you've got a cut and you've got a... Put a gauze on there and a bit of alcohol to make sure I don't get an infection.
Still can't help you.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, and well, there you go. Crystal Palace in the final with Watford. That's what, in 10 days' time, is it?
It's the bank holiday Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
No one really expected them to go and win that game. 0-0 after the first leg at Selhurst Park. And Glenn Murray got a bad knee injury. It's top scorer for Palace. Go to Brighton, been playing very well. And... Brighton just kind of froze a little bit on the night. They had one good chance where Wilfried Zaha let in Will Buckley, who another good winger like Zaha, and it was saved. And after that, Palace seemed to have this game plan where they looked like they didn't have anything in the final third at all until Holloway, after about an hour, brought on another winger alongside Zaha, Yannick Bolasie, who gave them a bit more going forward, and Johnny Williams, or as they call him, I think... Johnny Esther, because that's how he plays, missed a good chance. And then Bolasie put in a cross, Wainbridge fell asleep at the far post, and Zaha came in, showing why Man United have spent £15 million on him. Mm. Put them 1-0 up with a header, and then a brilliant turn with about 10 minutes to go or so, crashed a shot into the top corner, and Palace are on their way to Wembley.
Brilliant.
Watford,
yeah. Oh, they're going to play Watford. Who do you think is the favourite out of those two then?
I think Watford are the favourites, especially because there's still not going to be any Glenn Murray for Palace.
Right.
But they've been tight games. They played each other at the start of the season at Selhurst Park, and that was the first game of the season, actually. Zola's first game at Watford, and they won 3-2, and they've got much better since then. And then they played each other in February at Vicarage Road. Watford went up quickly, 2-0 up very quickly, playing very well. And in the end, Kevin Phillips got Palace a 2-2 draw. It was a great game, though, so hopefully it'll be something similar.
But Palace fans will be very excited about the fact that they didn't concede a single goal in these two legs with Brighton, because that's been an absolute horror show for them of late, isn't it?
Yeah, and they defended well. You know, if you have Danny Gabbard on at centre-back, then that's how you're going to play. It was, Matthew Upson was playing for... centre back for Brighton, Wayne Bridge. So it was, you know, a little tribute to the West Ham's relegation side from 2 years ago.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
Magnificent. All right. Well, other playoffs will involve Yeovil and Brentford. That's this Sunday, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And Yeovil beat them twice in the season, 3-1 and 3-0.
Yeah. I'm heading to that one.
Are you going to that one, Jacob? Yeah, that's nice. And in League Two, final wins out on Saturday, Northampton, Bradford.
Yeah. Bradford back at Wembley.
Back at Wembley. Absolutely amazing. Super. What have you got lined up for the weekend, Greg?
I'm going to Anfield on Sunday.
Of course, you did mention that. Sorry. Yeah. Mm. And James?
Stag do.
Hey! It's that time of year.
Yeah.
Yours?
No, it's not mine. No. Going to Madrid.
Really?
Yeah.
What hijinks have been planned?
Well, a friend who organised a stag in Barcelona went, I think he went on mini bullfighting, which I don't really get, you know, because you can get those sort of mini ponies. I don't see that whether that's okay.
I don't think that's okay.
I'm not down with bullfighting. I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't go for that. So I think it's just going to be, you know, the usual kind of
laser quest followed by a wimpy meal.
Is that what you did?
Oh yeah, come on.
Well, if that's possible in Madrid, then you know, maybe I'll make that recommendation.
I'd love a game of laser quest if you. You're not busy after the pod, I'm in.
Yeah, I used to love it.
Don't ask me to go paintballing again. Have you ever been? Not going
to
happen.
Have you ever been to Laser Quest?
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you go? When you were younger?
No, my son's birthday last year. It was great.
Because I've not been since I was a kid, and I just remember you'd always be enjoying yourself, and then some kind of 55-year-old man would jump out and do a forward roll and like kill you with about 13 shots to the chest. And I mean, it, rather that than him do something else to you, hanging around in a child-friendly zone, you know. But you weren't that man, were you?
I wasn't that man.
It's quite, it's better to be shot 10 or 15 times with a laser than it is with a paintball.
Paintball.
And bruises.
My paintball hell. All right, well, best wishes to the groom. What happens in Madrid stays in Madrid.
Yeah.
Good. And that's it for today's pod. Many thanks, James, Jacob. And you too, Greg Bukowski.
That's right.
Hey, I'm producer Ben.
Cheers, James.
Yep, no worries. We'll be back on Monday, etc. Might be a pay-per-view, I'm thinking, on Friday morning. Have a super time with your weekend.